So our next presenter will be Mr. Aldo Falcone. He is Senior Vice President, currently oversees the Science and Policy Portfolio of the Alliance. He's a nationally recognized expert on Hispanic health policy. He played a leading role in the landmark Disadvantaged Minority Health Improvement Act in 1990, and most recently has been active in health information technology policy, the Children's Health Insurance Program Reauthorization Act, Access for Underserved Communities on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Mr. Falcone, thank you.
Good morning. You know, Dr. Bullard, I always love listening to you. I just really hate following you. What I thought I'd talk about today is actually a specific initiative at the Alliance, because I think it tells the story of how the environment plays out in advocacy and in place. You know, and we purposely chose this kind of theme for what we were doing in environmental health, protecting and empowering the right of all people to clean air to breathe and clean water to drink. And we think it's important that we cast it in this issue that you can't get more basic than a right to breathe air and to have clean water to drink. And that's how we approach this work. Just my disclosure, I'm funded by the Kellogg Foundation to work in part on this issue. Thank you very much, Kellogg Foundation. This is our mission, to improve the health of Hispanic communities and work with others to secure health for all. And for us, ever since that is, with that as our founding mission, we have always seen environmental work as part and parcel of what we must do. Just a little bit about the Alliance. We're the oldest and largest network of Hispanic health providers. Last year, our community-based organization members delivered services to about 15 million Hispanics. If there's a bias we have, I have to say it is that we believe in community-based solutions, and that's where we put our efforts and our work. And by the way, you know, for many years, we were the only national Hispanic group that specifically refused to take funding from alcohol and tobacco companies. And we're glad to see some of our sister groups have been joining that now. The impact of air pollution, you know, it's been documented. The American College of Cardiology has been really doing a really good job lately of really documenting a lot of the respiratory risks, and we see them in our communities. For Hispanics, it's really hard when you think about it. Two-thirds of Hispanics live in communities where it's not healthy to breathe. Two-thirds of our folks. You know, this issue deserves so much more attention in the health community. About 1 in 5 Puerto Rican children have asthma. And when we looked at Census Bureau survey data, we were surprised to find that 23, about 1 in 4 Hispanic households don't believe their primary water source is safe to drink. About 3 times that of the general population. So what were we doing? HEAN, the Health and the Environment Action Network, this is a locally driven effort. And I have to say, the Kellogg Foundation was great to work with, because when we designed our national model and our national study, what we ended up doing was very little like what we said we were going to do. And that's because we believe in community-driven efforts. What we ended up doing, we're developing echo teams. And they used mobile platforms to do pollution-free zones. They looked at walk-to-green spaces and documenting environmental health risks. And I'll talk more about those in a bit. These were our partners. Again, this is a community-driven effort. We worked in Watsonville, California. That's a combination of both urban communities and farm worker communities. We worked in Brownsville, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border. We worked with CHAZ in Detroit, Michigan. We all know the challenges in Detroit. And with United Puerto Rican Organization of Sunset Park Uprose in Brooklyn, New York, in the Sunset Park neighborhood. It's where the places are located. These are some of the things we did. Education for us was important. What form that took changed from community to community. One of the interesting things that did happen is a lot of our agencies started running youth summer camps. You know, they thought, why not make the environment an issue that kids can learn about during the summer? We want kids to be outside. We want kids to play. You know, let's play with a purpose. So they created environmental eco camps. Since kids were involved, inevitably they created videos, and they have a whole YouTube channel I felt one of the more interesting education efforts was promotoras, lay health workers. And, you know, promotoras have been used widely in terms of health education, but not so much in terms of environmental health issues. And they did a lot of interesting things, like assessing home environment risks, and, you know, and really taking it to a person-to-person basis of how this is having an impact on your daily life. You know, we developed a lot of materials. In advocacy, a lot of our groups brought Somos el Futuro was one of the leadership and advocacy initiatives, really trying to bring the community together, folks who don't normally think about environmental issues, trying to get all of those folks around the table. I'll talk more about some of the things that our community agencies did. I'll say in advocacy, one of my favorite things that when our agencies came up with is they were complaining, when they did community meetings, folks were saying, well, we never see our representatives down here. So this group spent part of their money and got some donations, and they bought hybrid vans. They used those hybrid vans to provide community-friendly transportation between jobs. But what they also used them for was to do toxic tours. They labeled the buses, they brought legislators out into the community, and they did toxic tours of the community. I thought it was one of the best place-based advocacy efforts I'd ever seen. And in research, I'll talk a little bit more about that, some of the air pollution monitoring and water pollution monitoring we did. But again, getting back to communities and the places we worked in. In Brooklyn, you know, how everything worked was we asked folks and we listened to folks. It still amazes me that for many initiatives, is still such a radical idea that you should ask folks and listen to folks. But that's what we did. And some of the community concerns that came up were bus and truck emissions from an expressway that ran through the community, a lot of antiquated power plants, and this amazed me, the lack of green space. At the time that we started this project, the largest green space in this community was the cemetery. The responses were, one of the creative ones I thought was a business partnership, and they worked with donors, they worked with foundations, and they worked with the business community, did this public-private effort so they were able to retrofit trucks. So the trucks that were in their community were causing less of a health threat. I mentioned the hybrid bus toxic tours. Those are the kids actually at UpRose on YouTube unveiling their bus. As you can see, justice is displayed prominently on that bus. And one of the things I'm really proud of this community for what they did, as I mentioned, the largest green space was the cemetery. They put together a community designed program to develop a greenway and a blue way. At the end of the 4 years of this effort, that plan was approved, and it's actually under construction. So it's dramatically changing the nature of that community. And it came out of this environmental health effort, and I think it's one of the testaments of, you know, when a community gets together, what can happen and how it can change the nature of place. In Brownsville, what they were concerned about was some of the contamination in places that were fished. There were concerns about the environment around schools. And one thing that came out were environmental risks for expectant mothers. The responses here were working with the University of Texas in terms of a significant water monitoring collaboration. And in fact, that ended up bringing the EPA to examine PCB contamination and the Donner Reservoir in Brownsville, Texas. They were the ones that actually developed the idea of the youth summer echo camps that eventually all the communities ended up doing. And they worked with lay health workers. And this is a really wonderful model where they go into the home, they do an environmental risk assessment of using our mobile monitoring equipment of the air and the water around the home, but they also do an in-home assessment of the type of chemicals that are used and how to create a greener home, and of course the issue of how to do that most cost effectively. It's not necessarily always buying expensive products, but it's what kinds of things that you can use that are available cheaply that are good alternatives to some of the things that might be more toxic in the home. This is the picture actually of, not all the schools were real happy with our project, by the way, when we started. This is some of the kids in front of one of the elementary schools who are doing some of their monitoring. I have to say, not all the schools were happy with us at the beginning. By the end of it, we have a partnership with actually all the schools we started with at the beginning. In Detroit, big concerns, as many of you in Detroit, I'm sure, would expect, about the International Ambassador Bridge and the truck traffic. And the reason it's such a big concern is because in the community we're working with, a lot of that traffic is dumped, and a lot of the idling pre- and post-bridge travel happens in that community. Brownfields in Detroit came out as an issue. And people here brought up the issues like, well, you know, my neighbors don't know about the connection about environment and health and what are the risks. Some of the responses were monitoring of truck traffic. And again, you know, the kids came up, and a lot of youth were involved with this work, which was terrific. The kids actually did this whole series of time-lapse videos that are available on YouTube, which were count the truck videos, just counting in a 24-hour period how many trucks come through their neighborhood and how much idling is happening in their neighborhood. They did a lot of advocacy around brownfield issues. And another really great initiative, I think, they were concerned that their neighbors didn't know a lot about these issues. So instead of, they took the whole idea of a Tupperware party and turned it into an eco party. You know, and food's very important to us as a culture. So, you know, food was served, and it was a party, but it was talking about environmental issues, about, you know, what were... And also a place for people to talk and hear concerns. It was a different way of doing focus groups, if you will. And those, a lot, out of those echo parties, a lot of advocacy ended up coming out. In Watsonville, California, it's a farm worker community because, as you can expect, there were a lot of concerns about risks in the fields. One thing we weren't expecting is folks were very concerned about an airport that was situated near them, and that ended up coming very much to the forefront. And in particular in Watsonville, they were real concerned about youth being involved in environmental issues. One of the things they did is they saw a need for a legal component in terms of advocacy for the rights of farm workers and their working conditions, and that's in place now in Watsonville. They did a lot of monitoring around in the community around the airport, and they have been very active in advocacy in terms of working with the airport commission and the city in terms of those issues. And they partnered with the schools. And one of the interesting things, there's a whole series of videos where the kids are talking about environmental issues, but they actually, the kids are actually the group that are monitoring environmental health. You know, this is them monitoring water at a drinking fountain in one of the schools. They're the ones that are monitoring and assessing their own environmental quality. One of the things that folks wanted in the four communities, they said, you know, this is great that we're doing this here, but we want to help others. They came up with the idea of these pollution-free zone study. And this is the thing where we had mobile monitoring equipment. And so how did you design a study that, and again, this came from the community. They wanted to design their own study that they could then help others implement where they lived, in order to assess what were the risks that were going on for them. What we ended up doing was we defined a study area in each place, and we have resources on how to do that, designed how to do a study period, made sure to the communities it was important to include, make sure certain things were in there, like schools, some of the traffic areas, that these were also residential places, and to include places where kids played. This is some mobile monitoring equipment that we introduced to the U.S. that we worked with a company in the U.K. on. And it was important to us to develop some monitoring equipment that we could put into the fields with communities that had limited amount of training necessary. And this is what I really love about this project, that we didn't bring in research teams. This is not a group of university scientists doing research. These are groups of kids. These are groups of parents. They're going out and they're doing their own research. And the equipment is designed in such a way that it automatically uploads into an analysis software that we've developed that they can then see what's happening. And as you can see, we have water monitoring equipment, and these are some of the air pollutants that are measured by the EcoPacks. We did this protocol. Now, I said that the data goes out once it's measured. And what was one of the things that folks were concerned with was, you know, how do we present this data? So what they did is they came up with the idea of, well, can't we do with something with Google Maps? We said, well, we don't know. So we worked with Google, and we came up with this mapping system so that you can see graphically within the study area what were the risks that were faced. And then this really took off. It ended up just not being these pollution-free zones that were measured. People used it in all kinds of ways. For instance, a lot of our kids did their walk to school. Their walk from home to school, a lot of kids have on our website now the risks that they face plotted graphically on Google Earth Maps. You know, these were some of the results. Some of the things we did find is school sites consistently showed elevated air pollutant levels. In a couple of our locations, traffic associated with international ports of entry were issues of pollution. And I have to say, speaking to what Angela was saying, we weren't planning to really talk about transportation issues. This came completely out of the community. And when we did focus groups, when we talked to folks, they were really concerned about the buses. They were concerned about the traffic in their community. They were concerned about those bridges on international ports of entries. That became a primary concern. And again, also emissions from heavy-duty diesel vehicles showed primary. So what did we learn? We learned community-based efforts and research are really effective. With the right tools, you don't need a university research group in there. And we had university partners, you know, with our community. But this was research that was not led by universities. It was not led by us as a national group. It was led by ECHO teams. It was led by groups of kids. It was led by groups of parents. And those are the folks that did all of the research. You know, as professionals, we've had this argument that's gone on in the past about, you know, the link between environment and health and is there a direct link. That doesn't exist in the communities we were working with. They saw very clearly a link between where they lived, a link between the environment and their health. And for all of them, you know, we've discovered place-based concerns. That was already there. When we were talking to folks, they were concerned about the power plants and the bridges and the green space and, you know, what's happening in their work. And then the idea that research has to be done to communities rather than by communities, it really, for us, was very evident here that, you know, just what a fallacy that is. With a few tools, you know, the whole idea of research and advocacy was really embraced by the community, and they were the folks that led this effort. If you want to learn more about this, there's a lot up on our website, heenaction.org, and we thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Falcon, for that great presentation. I was shaking my head the whole time. You're really talking about, you know, community-based participatory research is really something we call community-owned and managed research. And so it's really exciting to see that. And then as a board member of Community Campus Partnerships with Health, we will be trying to work with HEAM to really get that model out as one of the things we need to move forward with as a best practice in the future. So thank you. Let's thank Mr. Falcon for his presentation again.